Bill Fennelly's here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Comprehensive Winnipeg Jets discussion and analysis for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Pleased to be joined by Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk sporting a Chicago Cubs hat. Is that right, Dave? Correct. Okay, there you go. Big Cubbies fan this week after being a Pirates fan, I believe, and a Dodgers fan the last couple weeks.
And so certainly, Mets. I actually think I was wearing Mets last time.
Mets week. So certainly no sports bigamy going on from Dave Manuk over there. But nice to see you, gentlemen. It's been a whole about 10 and a half hours since we last got together. I hope everybody is doing well on this Saturday. Maybe one last dose of fried matzah before Passover wraps up. Whatever it might be. Happy Easter to all those who are celebrating Easter this weekend. We hope it's so nice to see so many of you this morning in the chat. And, you know, I guess equally as nice to see Dave and Ezzy as well.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I just stayed up all night. I was too excited for today's show, so I didn't even go to bed. So I'm a little bit tired, but I've had 14 cups of coffee, so I should be good to go.
Only 14.
I was thinking about going for that 15th cup, Drew, but yeah. You know, I decided that, you know, 14 was probably my max. But yeah, it was an exciting game last night, boys. Like, you know, we had a great post-game show and we had lots of good participation, you know, in the chat from everybody watching. And, you know, it was one of those games where, you know, you didn't want it to end, right? And I kind of made the joke, like, I was just assuming Mark Scheifele was going to keep that shootout going. But obviously, you know, he wasn't able to beat Jack Campbell. And, you know, and aside from Andrew Kopp, nobody was able to beat Campbell last night. So it was just one of those fantastic games. And, you know, I think when you look back on that game, it's, you know, easy to, you know, think of the second period or, you know, the overtime when Dubois took the penalty and, you know, think that, you know, the Leafs could have easily scored on that power play. But Hellebuck, you know, made some big saves and, you know, it's going to be exciting. These two teams meet four more times. And, you know, the fans are the ones that win here because, you know, we're going to have meaningful games. Both of these teams want to finish first. And you know, Dave and Drew, we can talk about, you know, how much that matters. I really don't think it's going to matter as much as it did in previous years. And in previous years, we know home ice advantage isn't as big of an advantage maybe as it used to be. But especially with no fans, you know, we know the Jets are going to make the playoffs. So whether they end up finishing first or second or third, we know they're going to be a playoff team. But it was a great hockey game last night, and I'm looking forward to the next time these two teams play.
Yeah, can't help but think that if the Jets do the playoffs, what do you think? That they're going to have, like, you know how teams are using cardboard cutouts? You got to think they're going to have some sort of whiteout cutout. So the arena, it seems like it's a whiteout, even if there's no fans in the building.
They'll certainly try and sell cutouts of fans.
Lots of teams, like the Brandon Wheat Kings did that. And a lot of times, it's not like they're doing it for profit. The money goes to, usually they go to their charity, their foundation. So, I don't think it'd be a big deal. And I think it'd be good. I think our friend Brad Schlossman, who works for the Grand Forks Herald, I think he was in the Korean Baseball League or something like that. I think there's a picture of him there. So I think it's kind of fun. I think that, you know, I actually was a little surprised that they haven't done it to date, but I suspect that that'll be something you'll see in the playoffs.
Well, you know, what they really need to get rid of, and this is a total aside and really not completely relevant to the show today, but that's okay. They need to get rid of that red light bouncing off of that red truck in the corner of the Saddle Dome because that is distracting. I don't know how the players haven't complained about that. You know, you watch the game on TV in Calgary whenever the Jets were there, or if you're watching, you know, another game in Calgary, there's a red glare on the ice. And I know that it distracts me as a viewer. I tweeted about this when the Jets were there, you know, last week. I got a lot of comments saying, yes, it distracts, you know, other viewers as well. So it's not me being a grumpy old man who yells at a cloud for once. But, you know, I think that's something that, well, I don't think the playoffs are going to be an issue in Calgary, but I think that's something I'm surprised that the NHL hasn't already addressed, that red light glaring off the red truck is causing a distraction for viewers at home. But, you know, that's an aside that really I don't think we need to delve too deep into this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So nice to see so many of you joining us in the chat. Good conversation going on with all of our community of Winnipeg Jets fans. If you're new here, if you haven't already done it, smash the subscribe button. Make sure you like the show, subscribe to the show, get it alerted each and every time we go live on YouTube. So we really encourage you to do that. Let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets and the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, when you really sort of look back at it since last Saturday when the Jets lost in Calgary, not a great week for the Jets. 1-2-1 is their record. So, you know, four times the Jets played this week. They only got one win in those four games. But, you know, I think we're at the point of the season now where 500, close to 500, a little over 500 is going to be good enough for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, last night, obviously, you wanted to get the win. It ended up going to the shootout. You lose in the shootout. You sort of, you know, shrug your shoulders a little bit and say, you know, oh, well. But the game was the way they wanted it to look after Wednesday's game wasn't the way they wanted it to look. You know, the game in Calgary on Monday was a dominant effort. So I think it may be getting a little lost in the shuffle that the Jets' record this week really wasn't great and was probably actually one of their worst weeks record-wise. But the results are still good enough to keep them firmly in a playoff position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, the record, and it doesn't matter at this point, right? Because as you say, Drew, I mean, the Jets have a, I don't know what you would say it is right now, 90% chance of making the playoffs. It might even be higher than that. But I mean, you're talking about, you know, a 4-3 record on that road trip. And we talked about how important it was to win that last game against Calgary, because certainly the Flames needed it much more than the Jets did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these two games against the Leafs, I mean, you have to look at these games individually almost, right? Because the first game was definitely disappointing. I mean, we don't have to go back and rehash, you know, that first period when the Jets came out really sluggish and fell behind a couple of goals, right? But the game yesterday is much more indicative of how they've played most of the year. So, yeah, you only got 1 point out of a possible 4 points against the Leafs. But, you know, we talked about this. I mean, the Kyle Connor goal, the Kyle Connor save, you know, that Jack Campbell makes, like, you know, the Jets had their opportunities. Like they brought it in the third period after they kind of slumped a little bit in the second period. So, yes, I mean, you left some points on the board. You know, over the last couple of weeks, you've been a 500 hockey team, so you don't like that. But I think all things considered, you know, having those 17 games in 31 days in March and a majority of those games, Dave, you know, on the road, I think overall the fact that you're in a position right now in early April, you know, to finish first in the North Division, that's what we should be focusing on. And look, the Jets, you know, have some warts in their game. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, watching that game last night against the Leafs, just talking about that one game, boys, I mean, they came to play, and, you know, I think they showed us that when they're playing at their A level, you know, they're not afraid of the Leafs, and you know, they can beat the Leafs. And yes, Jack Campbell was otherworldly. There's no doubt about that. So yeah, I think again, like, you lost some games that you probably should have won, but, you know, the schedule does get a little bit easier here. And then, of course, you know, a couple of weeks from now, you're going to play the Leafs three times at home, but you've got the Senators coming up. You've obviously got the Habs coming up, which aren't going to be easy games. So, you know, it is going to get a little easier, and you're going to get some more days off and everything like that. So
I think to your point there, Ezzy, about the days off, I do think that, you know, this week from now until next Thursday, where they head out on the road to Montreal, only having that one game in the next 5 or 6 days, it is going to be, I mean, it looked like there for a while, it was going to be zero games between now and next Thursday. Obviously the Ottawa game got moved from the end of the year to Monday, but I do think that this little break that the Jets are in right now, because it's really rare this year to get, you know, only one game between, you know, 5 or 6 days like the Jets currently have. I do think that's going to be almost a good opportunity for the Jets to take a deep breath, to reset. You know, they play on Monday, you know, just sort of recalibrate themselves and refocus themselves for the next 18 games of the stretch drive to the playoffs. As you mentioned, the odds of the Jets making the playoffs, according to Money Puck, the Jets have a 95.1% chance to make the playoffs in the North Division. The Leafs are at 99.91%.
What's Montreal?
Montreal's actually ahead of the Jets at 98.3%. Yeah. Yeah. Edmonton's just behind the Jets at 94.4%. Yeah. So you got to go all the way down. Calgary's odds after they lost last night to Edmonton in regulation, I should add, the Calgary is down to 8% chance to making the playoffs. Yeah. So it almost seems like it's home and cooled for the top four teams in the North Division, Dave.
Yeah, and I think the key is just getting through this healthy. I think that's the number one factor. And I think, you know, when you have that many games in that short a period of time, I think there's an opportunity for you to lose players. And the fact is, obviously, Blake Wheeler wasn't at 100%, but he'll have, today to rest and recover. You know, Paul Maurice said it. We thought we might see a full practice on Sunday, but Paul Maurice said in his availability that they're going to allow guys to stay off the ice that are, needing to heal up. And I'm sure, look, in the course of a season, guys are always playing with something. There's nobody's 100% during an NHL season. So there's guys who are dealing with some sort of nagging injury. And I think what you're going to see is an opportunity for those guys to rest up. And you're going to play a Sens team in a one-off. And then what happens? Then Tuesday, you'll have probably either a day off or another light practice. And then Wednesday will be a practice day and a travel day. So yeah. Realistically, you're giving thank you, Blake. But realistically, what you're doing is you're giving your team that opportunity to kind of get to your point, Drew, get healed up, get ready. But you're not taking them out of a rhythm. That's why I think it's a huge advantage to the Winnipeg Jets to play that game on Monday. Because
as opposed to having the 5 days off.
As opposed to the 5 days. I mean, look, there's pros and cons for both, obviously, because you really give your team an opportunity to heal and rest up. And again, not to say that 5 days would be sufficient if you've got some serious injuries, but the reality is if you're playing, you could be injured, but you're probably not. It's not as serious as it could be to prevent you from playing in the lineup. And I think what this will do is it'll keep these guys in that rhythm and maybe feeling good about their game. They're feeling good about what they did against Toronto. You're going to have a one-off against the Senators, and then you're going on the road. You play two against Montreal, two against Ottawa, and then end in one in Toronto. So I think you're going to feel like you're not completely out of sync. And that's kind of the one thing, right? We talk about consistency a lot. I mean, we're looking at it with the Manitoba Moose, for example. They had a 12-day break between games, played a four-game series. Now they have a 7-day break between games, and then you play another series. Like, it's very – there's no rhythm. And hockey players are all about consistency and rhythm and patterns. And when you take them out of it, I think it throws them off. So I think there'll be a big advantage to the Winnipeg Jets to play Monday against the Senators. Forget about the – you want to call it an easy 2 points. I don't think any team is necessarily an easy 2 points in the North. But I think it's still an opportunity to keep them in that rhythm, and I think that's important for the Jets.
Yeah, and to that point, Dave, we talked about this a little bit on the postgame show last night. Like, you would have liked to have a little bit more practice, but, obviously you're going to have, a day or two less practice right now. But you're going to have to be very careful with how you practice, because you guys mentioned, the upcoming road trip. What is it? 5 games. But after that, the Jets are going to have those, 6 home games in a row. And there's going to be a 3-day break between that game against the Oilers and, the 3 games against the Leafs in a row, which includes a back-to-back, right? So you're going to have, you'd think they're going to practice probably a couple times out of those 3 days. You assume they're going to get, a day off. There's no reason to think, they're going to practice 3 days in a row. But that's something to watch here, because some of these players are going to get rested towards the end of the season. We just talked about it. I mean, the Jets are going to the playoffs. It's 95%. You might as well just make it 100% at this point in the season. So that's something to watch as well. Even though these games are going to have seeding implications, I think you have to just assume that, some of the big boys and some of the guys that are hurting, might get, the last game of the season off, the second last game of the season off, stuff like that, right? So, yeah, at the end of the day, the Jets are in a good position here. Like, you go back to when the season started. I mean, if you knew that you were going to be in second place with a chance to catch the Leafs, it's going to be tough. Don't get me wrong. Picking up 4 points and passing them isn't going to be easy. But, those games coming up against the Leafs, it's going to give them an opportunity. As we say, those are going to be those 4-point games where they're going to, hopefully be able to leapfrog them and get top spot in the division.
And then one thing I just want to interject quickly, because Blake Wallace is in the comments made a good point, and I think it's one that's worth noting, is the fact that it gets rid of a back-to-back. So that April, May 7th in Ottawa, against Ottawa, sorry, and May 8th were back-to-back games. And I think from a Jets perspective, especially to end the season and then get ready for the playoffs, to eliminate a back-to-back where, you could have something happen. Guys aren't always as crisp in the second game of a back-to-back. I think that'll be big for Winnipeg as well. So talk about an opportunity, right? You keep them in the rhythm and you eliminate that back-to-back.
With the caveat, I just want to put an asterisk on that, Dave, that we don't know when the Canucks games, the two that were postponed.
Yeah, of course.
When they're going to be rescheduled.
And Andrew Kalp talked about this yesterday when asked. I don't think they're going to screw the Jets and put them like 1, 2, 3. I think that they're going to pace them out a little bit. So I think, and again, I just think if they hadn't done this, Think about how much more condensed it would have been at the tail end of the season. So I think you're right. It's possible that they could end up having those Canucks games if the Canucks play. We don't know. And that's a, you know, Coffee and Tea is asking a valid question. Could the Canucks season be over? I suspect not. I suspect they'll just wait to see what happens with them. But, I think it's just right now, based on the way things are, it's a benefit for the Jets the way the schedule has now played out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The Jets aren't a team right now that needs a lot of practice in the sense of improvement, because, you know, the way they played, you know, Monday against Calgary, that's how they want to look. The way they played last night against the high-flying Toronto Maple Leafs team, that's how they want to look. Mm-hmm. So things are going pretty well for this Winnipeg Jets team in terms of their game resembles on the ice what they would like it to look like when discussing it in the dressing room, when sketching it out on the whiteboard. The game looks pretty similar to how they want it to look. So these practices, I think, are more an opportunity for Paul Maurice to maybe, I'm going to use the word experiment, for lack of a better word, maybe try some different things out, as opposed to really having to refine a lot. Because, you know, frankly, if the Jets play like they played last night, more often than not, they're going to be successful. Last night, it obviously went to a shootout, and when it goes to a shootout, you flip a coin. But, you know, for the most part, you know, the Monday game, well, that was, you know, utter dominance against a lesser opponent. And the Friday game, last night's game, was a high quality, even game against a team that that is in the upper echelon of the North Division and where you want to see yourself. And that's what the Jets sort of looked like last night.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this, after the 7-game road trip, you're coming off those games against the Flames, and then the opponent is much different in the Leafs. Right. And I think that was part of it, you know, why maybe they came out a little bit slow in that first period against the Leafs, because, you know, that's all the Leafs need. Like, they have so much talent. Like, I mentioned this on the post-game show last night, like, this is the best I've ever seen Austin Matthews play. And, you know, he's been a top player in the NHL for years now, but, you know, that line with Marner and Hyman, I really do think, It you could argue it's the best line in the league right now. I really do. And I realize, you know, the perfection line with, you know, Marchand, Pasternak, and Bergeron, that's a top line. There's other really good lines in the NHL, guys, but it's tough to argue. Like, you know, Zach Hyman is the third best player on that line. And, you know, many games he looks like the best player on that line. So the Leafs are a very dangerous team. So I really think it's impressive how the Jets were able to elevate their game last night and almost steal that game in regulation. But, you know, Dave mentions, you know, the way this team is playing is the way, you know, you want to look. And Drew, you touched on it, and that's completely right. And, you know, if they play anywhere close to the way they played last night, they're going to absolutely steamroll the Ottawa Senators. You obviously can't take the Senators lightly, if the Jets play like that consistently, they're going to steamroll the Senators. And then you're going to have some good games coming up against the Habs, because the Habs have given the Jets some problems this year. I mean, we've seen the Habs beat the Jets a few times this year. And, you know, they know that they're one of the teams they have to catch. Even if it's going to be tough for the Canadians to catch the Jets, this is a potential first-round matchup, right, boys? So those games are going to be very interesting. It's not going to be, you know, one of those, barometer games like we talked about, you know, back when the Jets and Leafs played those three games in Toronto, right? But the Habs are, you know, getting healthier. And, you know, this is a team that I don't think you want to face in the playoffs. I still think the Jets can beat them in the playoffs. But whenever you've got Carey Price and Jake Allen between the pipes and you've got all of that depth, they've acquired Eric Staal, I think it's not going to be an easy out in the playoffs.
I don't think there's going to be any easy outs in the playoffs, especially with the way the North Division currently looks. Saturday morning, nice to see so many of you joining us in the chat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The Illegal Curve question of the day, you can see it for those of you watching on the YouTube channel. You can see it scrolling at the bottom of the screen. Will Stastny, Dubois, and Wheeler succeed offensively, or are the Jets too top-heavy with Connor, Scheifele, and Ehlers together as a line? We want your input on that question. You can chat in the chat window. You can tweet at us at Illegal Curve, of course. you know, it was Monday that Paul Maurice made that shift, basically moving Mark Scheifele with Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers, moving Dubois with Wheeler and Stastny. We saw the immediate results from Connor, Scheifele, and Ehlers' dominant performance on Monday night against the Flames. Wednesday, they got a goal for the Jets, but it obviously wasn't enough. Last night, only one goal scored, and that was scored by Andrew Kopp. Let me ask you guys that question. You know, does 81, 55, and 27 work together, or are the Jets too top heavy right now with Dubois, Stastny, and Wheeler together?
They're not too top heavy, and that line absolutely works well together. And you just mentioned it, Drew. It's been three games now, and you know they've had the results, and you know they could have easily had a few goals yesterday. And I don't think it's a question of top heavy. It's something that we talked about on the post-game show. This is the thing to watch with the Jets. Is Paul Stastny going to move from the wing to center? That's the thing you have to watch. And then the question becomes, well, who's going to, you know, if Adam Lowry moves down to the fourth line, who moves up to the second line? And, you know, I've said this many times before. I think Andrew Kopp is a great candidate to move on the wing of that second line. And you've got some other players that you can choose from. I mean, Mason Appleton, I think the way that he's played this year, you could put him on the second line as well. But that's something that you want to watch. There's no doubt that the Jets have offensive depth, right? Like, so this is not a top-heavy team. Like, I don't think it's like a Calgary or a Vancouver. Like, you can see one of the main reasons, you know, those teams have struggled is because they don't have the depth like the Jets do or the Leafs do or the Canadians do or even the Oilers do, even though, you know, McDavid and Dreisaitl get two goals each every game. So I think that for me is what I'm going to be watching to see if, you know, you do see Stastny move down to center, like let's say that third line, and then what does that third line become? Like, do you see, is it Jansen Harkins and Paul Stastny and Mason Appleton? Or maybe it's Andrew Kopp and Jansen Harkins with Paul Stastny in the middle. And then you have, you know, like that's what I'm looking for. I don't think that because you've put Scheifele between Connor and Ehlers, that's taking away from any line. I think that line has been fantastic. And yeah, it might be changed up, but based on what we've seen, you know, that line has been very good possession wise and, you know, producing results.
Dave, since the line change was made, you know, Scheifele's got 4 points in three games. Connor's got three assists in three games. Ehlers has three assists in three games. So 10 points between those three, between that line and the last three games. Most of that coming, of course, on Monday against the woeful Calgary Flames. You then, the flip side of that coin is you look at Wheeler, one assist in those three games. Dubois, one goal in those three games. Paul Stastny also one assist. So do you think that Stastny, Wheeler, and Dubois is going to work long term? Or do you think that you haven't seen a ton from them so far, or mm-hmm. do you think it's just a matter of time as they get used to one another?
Well, I mean, what was the Jets' record during that time? 1-2-1?
Since Monday, 1-1-1.
1-1-1. But I mean, I guess ultimately that's what really is what you should be looking at, right? The individual points are great for individual players, but this is a team game and you want a team result. And so what gives your team the best chance to win? That's really should be the question that you're asking and looking at. And I don't know that, you know, individual points matter. I mean, obviously they could be a barometer for success, but I think you have to say what gives your team the best chance to win. Now, I think to you, a point you made earlier in the show, Drew, is that you have opportunity to test things out and practice. And again, it's essentially a foregone conclusion. You're going to be a playoff team. So what are you going to do for the last, how many games, 18 games in the season? What are you going to do? You're going to allow your team to hopefully be healthy and get through this in a healthy manner and not sustain any major injuries. But you're also going to allow the team to really test some things out and try some things. And so you're trying it right now. And again, it's been three games. Like you don't lose your mind because it's three games and they haven't been dominant or they haven't had the level of success that you anticipated they would instantly. I mean, teams, it just doesn't happen like that. And again, does Pierre-Luc Dubois still look like a guy who's getting comfortable within the Jets framework? I think so. I think that there's still a lot more from his game that you're going to come to see. And again, it's about becoming comfortable in your own skin in the team. Like, you know, is he too deferential, which I've seen some people suggest to older players like Wheeler and Stastny in terms of doing some things on his own? Maybe. But I just think like it's one of those situations where, you know, it's almost like we were talking about with Pascal Vincent, like that instant gratification. It's been three games. So, you know, and again, it's not as if the Jets went 0-3. And so you're sitting there going, okay, well, you've got to keep rolling, see how it goes. And then again, the impression I got from Paul Maurice's media availability a few days ago or whenever it was, is that they're going to be trying some things out. They're going to be moving some players around to really see how that works. So he'll roll with this. And he said he was going to roll with this for a little bit, and then he'll go and try something else.
Yeah.
So, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, no. Nobody should be really, because, you know, you look at the success that, you know, Lowry, Kopp, and Appleton had on that road trip, right? Like, it wasn't that long ago that Andrew Kopp had his 4-goal game, right? Like, Lowry's been putting the puck in the net. Appleton's been putting the puck in the net all year long, right? So it would be one thing if you were kind of getting a lack of scoring from that third line. And then obviously, you know, the fourth line has been led offensively by Matty Perreault. You're not expecting a lot. You were never going to get a lot of goals from Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis. And we talked about it. They were very strong yesterday, you know, highlighted by that really solid shift late in the first period, right? So I agree with Dave. Like, yes, the second line is not clicking like you would want it to. Like, it's not getting the results, but they were much better on Friday night than they certainly were on Wednesday night. So, you know, you should look at some tinkering with that line. But there's time, and the Jets are healthy right now, and that's the thing that they have going for them. It's not like they don't have options. Like, you can move Kopp up, you can move Appleton up. I mean, you could even move a guy like Matty Perreault up. But really, I sound like a broken record here, boys. But the big thing is, are you going to go up the middle with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and Lowry? That's the big question, and I think we're all waiting. Nobody knows the answer, but we know that's kind of, you know, the wild card that Paul Maurice has in his pocket right now, right?
Well, you know, I pulled it up on my second screen here. When I look to the right, there, I'm looking at my second screen. It's going back to March 22nd. So what's that? About, you know, 10 days or so ago. You look at the Jets' time on ice per game played. So over the last 7 games, the lowest forward on average ice time per game is Trevor Lewis at 10 minutes. And the highest forward is Mark Scheifele at 20:46. We haven't seen the Jets be able to sort of spread out time on ice like this, I think, ever in Paul Maurice's tenure as Winnipeg Jets head coach. For so many years, it was always about the fourth line playing 5 minutes, 6 minutes a game, and it was a hold your breath 6 minutes a game. Just the ability to spread that time out and really not have your and still get the results is a huge asset, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets, especially as you get closer to playoff time when your guys are fresher. And we've talked about this, and we thought that would be why they would use the taxi squad, and it hasn't come to that this year, that they haven't used the taxi squad to keep guys fresh. But they're doing a good enough job keeping guys fresh by constantly rolling 4 lines a game, you know, no matter the matchup. And that's, I think, I'll raise my hand and say that I didn't quite understand why Lewis and Thompson were getting the minutes they were getting, but they've outperformed my expectations, you know, vastly outperformed them. And I think that explains to some extent why the Jets are playing so well, just the ability to constantly get 4 lines into the game and keep everybody fresh and not have to run your horses into the ground too heavily.
Yeah, and you're going to have some injuries. Like, we obviously, you know, hope that they continue to be this healthy, but it's kind of inevitable, right, guys, that you're going to have an injury, even if it's, you know, a game or two. And then, you know, a guy like Jansen Harkins, you know, gets into the lineup, and especially, you know, come playoff time, which is obviously not for another, you know, month and a half or so. But yeah, you're right, Drew. I mean, this has been a luxury for Paul Maurice to have healthy forwards, to have the depth. You know, he's been able to keep that fourth line together. We've talked about how important it is to have, you know, a fourth line that looks the same, right? We've seen, you know, so many different machinations of a fourth line. If you think to last year and years before, and we know that, you know, Kopp, Lowry, Appleton has been together for the majority of the season. So yeah, we're talking about kind of minor issues here. Like, the Jets are one of the top offensive teams in the league. They've got a great power play. The penalty kill is pretty solid, especially, you know, as of late. We're kind of nitpicking here, aren't we?
Well, the problems that the Jets have are not extensive, and that's a good sign when you're at, you know, you're into the stretch drive and the home stretch of the season, that you're right. It's not like years past, like last year or 2 years ago, where at this stage in the season, you're saying, you know, it's almost what's wrong with the Jets. How are the Jets going to qualify for the playoffs? Are they going to be able to get over that hump? You know, they have to go, you know, put the, you know, the pedal to the metal the entire time. These problems, Dave, for the most part, are minor ones, and it's more about tweaking than it is about revamping an entire system at this stage.
Well, and I think you make a very good point, Drew, in terms of the minutes. I think that's probably a reason why your guys are staying healthier. right? You're not overtaxing them. You're not overburdening them. And especially in a condensed schedule, I think how important that is. So I think what you're seeing is again, this is nothing's normal about this year, right? I mean, it's not as if the coaching staff knew how to adjust to playing in a pandemic year under these circumstances. None of the teams did, but you have to give them credit in terms of their ability to get these guys to buy in, and in terms of the rest and recovery phase of things. And again, I think we're seeing the benefit of that from a perspective of a healthy team, a team that's not sustaining injuries. And again, I'm not saying that you couldn't have something happen in a freak manner. Of course you could, but I just think you don't see the minor things that seem to be that normally take a team out. And maybe, and again, I'm not saying this is 100% the reality. I'm just thinking, like, based on the way, you know, it's a little bit of conjecture here, but it just seems that this team seems to be rolling along in a health manner, because maybe in part because they're managing to play a complete team game. They're playing four lines. They're not relying on that first line to play, you know, 24, 25, 26 minutes a game like we saw early in the season. So, and I agree with Mark. I mean, I've been a proponent of that for years. You can't hide your fourth line. You need to be able to roll them out. And Paul Maurice, again, people don't agree with it. People didn't like the fourth line, but Paul Maurice has been singing the praises, if you remember, for what, 2 weeks now? That he's been specifically pointing out his fourth line after post games, during practices. He's been singing their praises, and he's been saying like how he feels confident in rolling them out in certain situations. And we've seen it in games, late in games, that fourth line comes out to do something because, you know, you've got a face-off that you want Nate Thompson to win and or you feel comfortable with those guys protecting. So again, I think there's been a balance of those lines, not necessarily all the top two lines. And maybe people want to see there's a little more balance throughout the course in terms of scoring, but I think that you're seeing a little more balance. And I think a result of that has simply been that maybe it's allowed this team to be a little bit fresher and stay a little bit looser.
I would agree with your assessment there, Dave. Leah Hextall is going to join us momentarily. So why don't we just take a bit of a pause, pay some bills, play some advertisements, commercials. And when we come back, Leah Hextall going to join us for more Jets talk and talk about that 5-overtime thriller that happened last Saturday in U.S. college hockey. She was on the call, the play-by-play broadcaster of that game. So take a pause, sip some coffee. We'll be right back.
Smash the like button.
Smash the like button. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard!
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bottom of the hour, we're live on our YouTube channel and all our social media platforms. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manouk. And there she is, a good friend of our program going back many years. I wouldn't say we grew up together because you were in this business longer than we have, but it's been a while. And we have a rule here on Illegal Curve, Leah, that if any friends of ours ever call a 5-overtime game, if they're ever on the play-by-play call for that, they immediately get an invite back onto the show. So good to see you. Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, guys, thank you. It's so lovely to see you all. I remember we do go way back. This would be back in, like, almost I feel like the early aughts, as the kids call them nowadays. But when you guys first started, and just to see everything that you guys have done and where you've taken this, I mean, I know it just started as a passion project and back in the day, and then look at you guys now. So congratulations on everything you guys have done with this. And it's so nice to be back with the boys of Illegal Curve. So thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure, Leah. You know, we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets, but we have to go back to last Saturday. I mean, you know, as a broadcaster, and I have no experience in this. I mean, we've done some long broadcasts, but we've never done play-by-play like you were doing last Saturday. 5 overtimes, 8 periods of hockey, you know, a game to qualify and to go to the Frozen Four. You know, just, I guess, sort of walk us through what you're experiencing, you know, period by period as you're broadcasting that North Dakota Minnesota Duluth game last Saturday night. Minnesota Duluth obviously winning 3-2 in overtime. Just sort of walk us through the emotions of the event, I guess.
Well, right there, Drew, you hit it. The fact that this was a regional final. So one of these teams is going to go and have the ability to be in the Frozen Four, which gives you a great opportunity in Pittsburgh to win a national championship starting on April 8th on ESPN. So there's so much on the line for these college kids. And you have to remember that these two teams had senior classes. UND had a senior class that had 8 incredible people, including Winnipeg, Manitoba's Jackson Keane, the son of Mike Keane, who was a grinder on their fourth line, who's meant so much to them throughout this program. Also spent some time in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, so really has roots to Manitoba. And they had this senior class that, because of COVID-19, they didn't play the NCAA tournament last year. So all of these 8 seniors came back for UND. It was the only second time in the program's history that they've had a full upper class return, because they had unfinished business, and that was their motto, you know, all season long. And they're the top team in the nation. So they're coming up against the 2-time defending national champions in Minnesota Duluth, who on the other side of that have a freshman class that has never lost a tournament game, because all they do is win national championships, that are now their senior class. So this was what was going up against each other. So we knew that this was going to be not only the marquee game of our regional, but probably the marquee game of all the regionals. There was so much on the line here for those two teams. So going into it, you just don't want to screw up. That's basically it. Is, you know, that was my emotion, is I just didn't want to screw this game up, because it's such a big game and the entire crew felt the same way. You want to have your best performance. And then the game starts, and through 40 minutes, we didn't have any score, but it wasn't one of those scoreless, boring games. This was a game of back and forth, great saves, great structure, playing very well, some power play opportunities, great kills. And then you get into third and bang, bang in a buck 20, Minnesota Duluth, the defending champion, score twice on Adam Scheel. And it's looking like they're going back. It looks like they're going back to the Frozen Four, but with 2.5, Brad Berry, who we all know back from his Manitoba Moose days and as an assistant coach, he pulls his tender, Scheels out, and they go bang, bang. And suddenly we're tied at 2 in the dying seconds. And the emotion that, you know, the call had for me in those moments, there was nothing forced about it. You know, sometimes as a play-by-play, what I've learned is that even if it doesn't feel exciting, you have to illustrate that emotion through your tone. And it's something that I work on, because I'm still very new to this. But this was just, I was completely caught up in the game. I remember when Jordan Kawaguchi tied it at 2-2, the captain for UMD, my arms went up and I went like this to my head, because I was like, it's tied, you know, and you couldn't help but just be living with them. because it was incredible. And we had fans in the stands. In Fargo, we had 25% capacity. And these fans, if you guys have been to college hockey game, especially at UND, you know they're fans. They travel well and they just are in it. And Minnesota Duluth had amazing fans there as well. So it was great. So we had that emotion in the rink. So it was incredible. And then overtime starts. And overtime starts. And you think, and I really thought it was going to end quick. I thought someone's going to nail this. And, you know, we went through it and then we had the offside goal. It looked like I had my game call. Minnesota Duluth is moving on. Book it to Pitt. They're off, you know, kind of thing. And then it gets called back and we're going again. And then it started to build. And, you know, listen, overtime, as you guys know it, when you have so many overtimes, the game's going to decrease mental fatigue, physical fatigue, not only for the players, for us as well. And, you know, you make your little mistakes calling that game. And I definitely did. But you're with it and you're just doing your best to, you know, focus on what's going on, keep emotion, keep people entertained. But, you know, then at the end of the day, Luke Milmok, the freshman from Wilcox, Saskatchewan, who got inserted into the lineup for this game, the lowest time on ice of all the players, ends it in overtime and sends Minnesota Duluth back to the Frozen Four. So sorry for the long-winded answer, but it was just one, like, you know, it's eight periods of hockey, right? So it's hard to condense it, but it was one of those games where you really didn't have to force it because, you know, maybe second, third intermission was a little bit, but it was so exciting. And I just feel thrilled that I'm part of the 5OT club that, you know, ESPN's Steve Levy is part of it and our friend Gord Miller from TSN, and that's it. So it's rare air. So I just feel really fortunate to have been a part of it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Leah, you definitely do not have to apologize because that's why we asked you. We texted you to come on, and you know we want to talk some Jets with you as well. But we have to keep talking about this game. There's so many, you know, questions that we have, right? Like, did the shoes come off earlier before the fourth OT? Because I saw your tweet that the shoes came off. So we want to know, you know, if the shoes came off, you know, between the third period and the first overtime, or if it was just later. But honestly, like, I wanted to ask you about, you know, as this game was progressing, like, did you get that feeling maybe, like, as you said, you thought that the game might end in the first overtime, but as you got into the second and third overtime, like, you know, Minnesota Duluth head coach, the famous Scott Sandlin, said, like, this is the best game he's ever been a part of. And as you mentioned, like, this is a guy who's done everything in college hockey. Like, did you start to, you know, now that you've had time to look back on it, I guess, but like when you were in that moment, was that kind of going through your head? Like, everybody in the hockey world is watching this. And that's why I think, you know, all of Manitoba was so proud that you were getting to call that game, right? Because everybody was just so, you know, anxious and excited to see, you know, how that game was going to end.
Yeah, you mentioned it right there. You know, Coach Sandlin, 21 years with Minnesota Duluth alone in his coaching career, was with UND prior. And for him to say that, and we interviewed him right after the game ended, and you could just see everybody was just gassed, you know, but at the same time there, especially for him, because he was on the winning side of it, you could see though the emotion in him that he was just so proud of his team and that they got through it and they got through it on the winning side and were still playing. You know, this was a game where my shoes came off after the third OT. I couldn't do it anymore. And that's my rookie mistake. I was in heels. First of all, I was not in stilettos or anything crazy like that. I'm not stupid. I was in very respectable, very comfortable heels that are made specifically for standing long times and for women. And it was so funny because in my car before I left, I went, my runners were right there. And I thought, well, maybe I should take them just in case. And then I didn't. And it just shows you, you always trust your gut. You always trust your gut when it tells you something, because I should have taken them because goodness, did I need them. So the shoes came off. I didn't care anymore. I was like, I cannot stand in these heels anymore. So that's when they came off, Ezzy. But, you know, it was one of those things where when you're in it, I was just so focused on just, you know, being able to do the job, because I'm very new to this. I mean, entering this game, I had called, you know, 12 games, 13 games. And I hadn't called in over a year. I hadn't called since my NHL game back on March 8th of 2020. And it was my confidence going into this tournament was low because I was very nervous about how am I going to do when I haven't called for so long, because there was no MJHL this year for me to practice on. You know, I just didn't have those opportunities to get reps. And the NCAA tournament is such a beast because they have selection show Sunday. So you have 4 days to learn four teams. And this isn't a league in college that I cover all the time. And it's a crapshoot. You don't know who you're going to get because of how they do the pairwise and whatnot, which they couldn't even do this year because of COVID and the way the season went down. So besides UND, I didn't know who else was coming. So it's just a great deal of work for everybody involved in it. So you go in feeling a little unsure of numbers and don't confuse this team with this team. And it was, you know, and then we had our Michigan game against Minnesota Duluth and no contest because unfortunately for poor Michigan, they had to pull out because they had a COVID-19 positive. And this was a team that has the projected number one overall NHL draft pick and Owen Powers on the team in a freshman class. It's just ridiculous. So we were pretty devastated about that, as was Michigan. So I had even less games to call going into this final. But, you know, I had one game. We got there. I felt pretty good about going into it. And as the game just kind of went on, you know, you just wanted to focus on the names and numbers. And my job was to describe the play. And I just was trying to keep it as simple as I could in my head, because where I ran into trouble, especially as I got tired, was when I had to start talking about other things. You know, I know I said, you know, I mentioned Jed Caulfield. Jacob Bernard Docker. We were reintroducing the game because we knew people were joining us as the game went on. So I remember saying he was a Pittsburgh Penguins draft pick, but he's an Ottawa Senator. So I had to correct myself, you know, at the very end of the game, instead of eighth period, at my goal call after it was done, I said eighth overtime. Like, there was those little mental mistakes. So what I learned from that is, you know, just keep it as simple as possible. Don't say more than you have to. Just call what's going on in front of you. And that's the biggest takeaway for me. But it's so weird because it's a week after, and I still don't think it's really set into me that this was historic. I know it was historic, but when you're in it, I just look at it like, wow, what an opportunity. I got to call two games in one. What great for my reps. So I was just thrilled about that. But I have to tell you guys, the support that I have received from that game call, I couldn't believe it, because you guys know the world of social media. It can be very, very negative. And everybody seemed to be very, like, really enjoying the game. And that, as a broadcaster, that's all I want. The game is the star, and I'm just there to narrate the action and identify the players so people know what's going on. I'm not trying to step into it or take away from it. I just want to narrate it. And I felt like I accomplished that. And so it was really satisfying for me just as an individual, because I still battle my confidence in the play-by-play role. I feel sometimes like, you know, that imposter syndrome. Do I know the game well enough to actually be calling it? But after that game, I felt like I hung in there for eight periods of hockey. And now I feel like I can say to people, yeah, I do play-by-play. So it was a really lovely game.
Well, Leah, I think I speak for everybody. First off, you're absolutely killing it. And what you're doing for female play-by-play broadcasters is unbelievable. So, and there's no doubt in most people's mind. If anybody has that doubt, then, I mean, those people don't know what they're talking about. You obviously know the game very well, and you're obviously, you know, gonna call many more games. So, you know, even though, you know, you were saying you were just struggling with confidence a little bit, and I struggle with, you know, confidence as well, because I have to live up to the, you know, the great work that Dave Minuch and Drew Mandel do on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So, you know, just wanted to get that in there, that there was nobody more proud of you than, you know, the 800 or so thousand Winnipeggers, and I guess Manitobans as well. We can't forget about the other Manitobans, but yeah, just wanted to get that in there. You're doing an awesome job.
Well, thank you, Ez. I appreciate that.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Leah Hextall, discussing her experience calling the 5 overtime game for the NCAA regionals last week. And I think we're going to also talk a little bit about the Jets. I turn it now over to my buddy, Dave Minuch.
Well, Leah, you know, we do know that you're also covering the Winnipeg Jets for CJOB. You're writing articles for them, and you're doing your sound bites for them. So what have you been your overall impressions of this team? I mean, it's been such an unusual year, but what have you thought about the Winnipeg Jets to date?
You know, guys, it's interesting because I think this is one of the best looking Jets teams that I've seen in a while. You know, I know that we always go back to 2018 when they went to the Western Conference Final and was a heartbeat away from going to the Cup. But when you look, I heard you guys speaking prior about the line combinations up front, and, you know, do we stick with, you know, the new line combo of, you know, Connor, Scheifele and Ehlers, or what do we do? The beauty thing is when you look at their forward core, it's even their fourth line. I mean, it's stacked, and it gives Palmerais, and I think he hit it. He said that line combination can work against different matchups, but then he has the ability to play around with two great centers in Dubois and Stastny. You know, he can up and down. Kopp can come up to the top six if they need him, but he can stay on that line, which is the most important, in my opinion, the Lowry line, and what they've been able to do to shut down other teams' top lines. You know, yes, the defense, we're always talking about our defense, but I really think that, you know, Derek Forbert has come in. I think he has done a very strong job. And this is a player that they brought in on a PTO. Like, you know, they've done some moves to make themselves better this year that I think have stabilized them in a way that we haven't seen before. And, you know, then there's Connor Hellebuyck just being Connor Hellebuyck. And if you have a goalie, you have a chance. And you guys know that more than anyone. You know, he took some criticism at the beginning of the year because they said he wasn't playing up to his Vezina caliber. But I really think that he has given them a chance to win whenever he's in the net, pretty much. So I really think he's starting to come along now. So and we're seeing a different thing. But I like this team. And I know there's been a lot of talk about what do they do at the deadline. And we're always wanting to see them go out and get something like a defense piece. But guys, no one wants to take on salary. No one wants to take it on. So if you're bringing a star over, you're not going to get that retention of salary from the other team. We're going to be in a flat cap for, I think, like the next 3 to 4 seasons personally, because these teams are taking a bath here right now in COVID. So, you know, I think this is a team that can make some noise. Do I think they're a Stanley Cup champion? It's hard to say. Because I don't know about you guys, but I've been paying so much attention to the North Division that I feel so disconnected to the rest of the league. Like, I've barely seen, like, I'm down in the States still. And this is the first time where, you know, the other night I watched I watched Vegas and L.A. And I hadn't seen Vegas play. And I was like, my God, they're good. You know, and I know they're good, but, like, I hadn't seen them physically play. So it's really, it's kind of hard to say what they should do because – we don't really know, but I think in the North, they can definitely compete and they can definitely get out of the North. And if they do that, then they have this beautiful opportunity to be what would be the conference finals, the final four, and go from there. And I think they're built for it.
And Leah, I was just going to say, you better watch some Pittsburgh Penguins games because your cousin isn't going to be too happy if you're not watching those games, right?
I know. And I like, it's so funny because I'm like, I have no idea what's going on with Pens right now. But, you know, I'll check in every once in a while. I've been so involved with college for the last 2 weeks that I just don't know what's going on. But besides the Jets, but yeah, I will definitely keep an eye on them as well. It's a little fan base there now for them because I want him to be successful.
Well, I was going to ask about that's got to be the weirdest part. You know, never mind a 5 overtime game, but seeing your cousin Ron Hextall as the general manager of the hated in-state Pittsburgh Penguins, that just has to be, you know, when that came across the wire, when you got a text about that, your eyes must have bugged out of your head saying, no, this can't be. This has got to be an early April Fool's joke. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Drew, because that's what you would think. You know, when that job came open and I saw it and, you know, Rutherford was stepping away, I sent an article and I just texted it to Ron and I said, well, isn't this interesting? And he didn't text me back. And that's how I knew he was going for it. Because Ron keeps everything close to the chest. It was very well known in Philadelphia that there were no leaks. He wasn't one of those people who, you know, and in his camp, they kept it very close. And I think that's a great way to do business. If you're not a part of the team, why do you need to know what's going on inside? And Ron is someone who keeps things close to the vest, as they say. So I had been tipped off by one of my friendly insiders that he had a second interview. So I sent him a text and I said, I heard you had a second interview, rooting for you. And he responded and he said, thanks. And in my head, I went, he got the job. And the next day they announced it, because I don't think he would have responded to me if it was still in process. Sure. So it was really interesting. I couldn't be more happy for him. I think, you know, wow, like, it is crazy because, I mean, it's such a rivalry, as you guys know. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, this is a franchise that he can go into. And I think he's the right guy for the job in this moment. He's going to have some really difficult decisions as a general manager with that team. You know, you have Malkin and Crosby. And yes, you want to keep them. But, you know, can you keep them? They're going to be aging. You know, they're still so dominant. But it's, you know, and they've got some cupboards to fill down in Pittsburgh. That's just a fact. And that's Ron's bread and butter. He loves the draft. It's his favorite thing. So I think he'll do a real good job there. And, you know, he just has to keep Berkey in check. So other than that, you know, that'll be good. But I'm really happy for him. But it's weird because, you know, I grew up cheering for the Flyers. You know, Ron played when I was little and, you know, from the time I was 8 till I was graduated high school. So I was a Flyers diehard. And then, you know, and then he became the GM and, you know, I was so excited and I just root. And then the fallout happened, right? And, you know, he gets dismissed from the job and I didn't think it was a fair dismissal. And, you know, but that's the business of hockey. We all know that. And so now it's kind of like, you listen, blood is thicker than water. And there's a little bit of me that's like, you know what? I kind of hope that Pittsburgh goes like this and Philly goes like this. And that's just, you know, that's kind of how I feel right now. But it's exciting to have him just back in hockey because he deserves to be in hockey because he's a good hockey man.
Bringing it back to the Jets, Leah, you know, earlier we were talking about the forward lines and, you know, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Connor. I mean, to no one's surprise, that line is successful. I mean, offensive dynamite, you know, on all three players. Do you think that Stastny, Wheeler, and Dubois will eventually sort of find their offensive footing? Or do you think that maybe this is our illegal curve question of the day? That's why I'm asking it to you. Do you think that maybe the Jets are a little too top heavy right now when it comes to their offensive firepower?
Yeah, it's a very good question, too, because when you look at that top line right now, there's so much dynamic offense on it. And you have to only question, is that too much? You know, is that too much? Is that too much speed? Is that too much talent? You know, now does Mark Scheifele become the assist guy instead of the finisher because he's got these two elite wingers that are playing with him with such speed, or is it the other way around? Who's the defensive conscience of that line? You know, that's a big thing. And when you look at Stastny and Dubois, they have those defensive conscience. They have the ability to be the playmaker and, you know, make sure as, you know, two centers that can both play center so well, but can also play on the wing. You know, I just don't know. I look at Wheeler and Dubois and Stastny, and to me, there's something about that line that it feels like it's missing a little bit of flair. And I hope that makes sense. I feel like it needs, like, these are three guys that are so talented and three players that are so talented, but they're all kind of a little bit similar. And I almost feel like there needs to be a bit of a spark on that line, but we'll see, you know, right? Like, it's very new into it. And I heard you guys say before, listen, this is it truly, I believe we can guarantee the Jets, if they continue to go the way they're going, are going to make the playoffs. So why not see what we have right now? Why not try it against the teams we know we're going to be facing in the playoffs, so we can see what works and the Jets can continue to see what works against different matchups while they have this opportunity. But I just don't know. I like the looks of things, especially that top line, but I don't know. I think that second line, I don't know if it's going to last. Maybe that's my verdict.
Yeah, no, I think those are some really good points that you make about the second line, because there's no doubt, I think, in anybody that's been watching the Jets as of late that, you know, Scheifele, Connor, and Ehlers, that's working, and it's obvious because those are the three most talented offensive players. But that second line definitely has been good, but they haven't been great. So I think that's definitely a good point that you make. It's something to watch to see if, you know, Paul Maurice switches that up a little bit.
And sorry, as I was just going to say, you know, we have to remember that it's great that they're top heavy and they're putting the puck in the net. That's great in regular season play. But as we all know, in the playoffs, those top lines, your top six get shut down and you need that secondary scoring from your bottom six. So if those lines are going to get shut down, maybe we do need to disperse the talent, you know, trickle it down a little bit. But, you know, I'm not Paul Maurice, and I think he knows a little bit more than me, but that's just my little opinion, and everybody has one, so we'll see if it's worth anything. But, you know, a line like that top line, when you start going into games now that people know it's together, they're gonna combat that with strategy on how to shut them down. So that second line is going to have to produce. So will it be able to do so?
We'll Absolutely. See. And I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned the, you know, the salary cap earlier and how, you know, GMs just, they can't take on, you know, any cap space. And that's why, you know, you heard Chevy in his press conference. I forget how long ago that was, you know, Dave, I think it was like 2 weeks ago. But, you know, he talked about kind of money in, money out. And I made the joke. It kind of seemed like I was taking, you know, financial accounting again at University of Winnipeg. But based on the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem like the Jets are going to bring in a big contract, are you kind of leaning towards more of, you know, a move that you bring in a player in the last year of his contract? Like, obviously David Savard, you know, has been linked to the Jets because of, you know, the connection with Pierre-Luc Dubois and just the fact that he's a really good, you know, solid right-handed defenseman. But are you thinking that if Chevy does make a move, it's most likely going to be for a defenseman, you know, that doesn't have any, you know, years left on his contract?
It probably will have to be when you look at, you know, all of those financial things. And this is the part of the game that I hate, guys, most of all. I hate talking contracts. I hate doing the math because I don't do math in my head very well. So I'm always one of those people who's like, oh my goodness, we have to go to contract situations. But, you know, the other thing that we have to look at too is, like, really, how much are they truly going to do to make this team better? Like, is Savard really, like, what is he going to do? You know, like, is that going to put it over the top? Because if it's not, is it worth it? You know, it's just one of those time periods that I know everybody wants to win. And I know the window to win is small. But this is a different year. And I really think there's going to be a lot of trepidation by general managers to make moves. And we still do have the quarantine. It might not be 14 days anymore, but it's still 7. So that's 7 days off, and then you're going right into almost playoffs. Like, how much time does this player have to gel with the team before we're rocking and rolling in the postseason? It's just such a weird time, and I think there's going to be a lot of thought put into it. But, you know, I think that's the only way you have to go. I don't think you're going to bring somebody in with multiple years, because don't forget, we've got some major players that are going to be coming up with contract needs sooner or later here. And one of them is 55 in the next few years. And, you know, he's going to be so coveted. And, you know, I really feel for general managers right now in trying to make moves, because it's just not an easy thing to do in this moment with so much uncertainty around what's going to happen within the league due to the pandemic.
You know, Leah, how likely do you think it is that we see you guys come up from the Moose? I mean, you've got a number of young, talented players that could, in theory, come up play. You've got Ville Heinola, who's now on the taxi squad. You've got David Gustin, Christian Vesalainen. And so how likely is it, do you see, if the Jets don't go the route of making a trade, that they maybe just look internally and think, okay, we've got a number of young prospects who have been having success in the AHL. We can just bring those guys up. And if we need to, fit them into our lineup.
You know, Dave, I love that point, and I think that's an excellent one. We sometimes forget about the fact that this is an organization that is so strong at draft and developing, and that Pascal Vincent down on the Moose is really turning them into Winnipeg Jets players right before our eyes, but yet we don't necessarily see the Moose as much because the Jets dominate our headlines. And when you mentioned just the names that you did, let's go. We just have to look back to Jansen Harkins. I mean, mm-hmm. He got brought up towards the end of the season and looked like he just was dropped in and fit in. And that's what the Moose do. They make these players ready to rock and roll, become Winnipeg Jets immediately by even using the same language. Paul Maurice and Pascal, they speak the same language when they talk hockey to these players. So that transition is so smooth. And I truly think, you know, listen, you know, with Ville, there's a little bit of a size. You know, he's still growing into the man he's going to be and whatnot. But does that mean he can't play? Does that mean that we can't look at those options? I don't think so. I think that's honestly a great path for the Jets to take. And especially if they don't make a move and they know that this is probably going to happen, getting those young players some games before the postseason, some of those games that maybe once we know that it's locked in and they're going to the playoffs, that they can get a little bit of, you know, reps under their belt, because that's what it's all about, feeling comfortable and getting them ready to play. But I honestly think in this day and age, that might be the best thing to go with. And I know some people probably don't like that idea because they'll say, oh yeah, but they're not proven or they're not ready. Well, they can't be proven until they get the opportunity to. So let's go.
The only thing more exhausting than 5 overtimes is spending 30 minutes with the Legal Curve. That's a truism in life. Leah Hextall is a good friend of the program. She's a play-by-play broadcaster. She also covers the Winnipeg Jets for CJOB. Leah, so good to see you. Thanks for joining us this morning. All the best, and we'll talk again real soon.
Drew, Ezzy, Dave, thank you so much, guys. It was my pleasure. And keep doing what you're doing, and take care of yourselves and be safe.
Likewise, Leah. Thanks, take care.
Thank you very much.
There she goes, Leah Hextall, joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. What a great interview. So great to catch up with Leah. Saturday morning, a little bit after 10 o'clock. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. To those of you who are just joining us, so great to see so many of you in the chat. While you're there, if you haven't already done it, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, give us a thumbs up. You know, leave us some comments. We love to hear from you every Saturday morning. And of course, post game after every Winnipeg Jets game, we're live here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and the Illegal Curve post game show. Dave Minuk, you have something you want to say. I can see you're eager. You're right next to the mic. What's on your mind, my friend?
No, I was just going to say, I want to let everyone know in the comments or who are leaving comments on our post game show on iTunes. That we appreciate it. I love it. Like it's picked up, and that's kind of the nice thing is that we appreciate it. And again, I'm just reiterating, and I'm a broken record, but otherwise, when Ezzy said he was a broken record, I was wondering what broken record is he? Would he be an AC/DC record? Would he be a Motley Crue record? I didn't know what kind of record he was going to be, but anyway.
Well, he's ZZ Top. There's no question. Yeah. He's ZZ Top with that.
I was going to say with my kids and the amount of meatloaf. Yeah, no, I was going to say probably right now with the music that I was listening to, probably Sharon Lois and Bram.
Anyways, so sorry, I was digressing, but it really is appreciated. And we love when people will drop those comments down on the on iTunes. It helps us. And again, we love the likes. We love the shares.
Yeah. No, comments are fine, but smash the subscribe button. That's what we really care about. Smash it.
Yeah. We appreciate all the support is the crux of what I'm suggesting.
That's some good cruxing there, Dave. Well, this segment of the show, nine days away from the trade deadline. So we'll talk about the NHL trade deadline, 9 days away. It's brought to you, this segment, by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, you know, we're into the nitty gritty here when it comes to the trade deadline, guys. 9 days away, like I said. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff sat down, or, you know, was on the phone at least with Pierre LeBrun, you know, talking about the trade deadline, talking about his plans or his potential plans.
Was he? And I don't know. I read that article. I didn't get any sense that he said anything of relevance.
He didn't. Right. I was going to say he was his usual circumspect self, but he was on the phone with Pierre LeBrun. Whether or not he said anything of relevance or anything of interest is a separate issue. Okay. It's undoubtedly that he was on the phone, unless he sent an imposter to do it in his stead. But I highly doubt that.
I read the article. I read the headline. I thought to myself, oh, okay, well, maybe Kevin Cheveldayoff said something interesting to Pierre LeBrun, and it's behind a paywall, so some people may not be able to read it. And I read it and I thought to myself, what did I learn exactly?
What you learned is, and here's a quote, I like our defense. It's not a household name type of defense, Cheveldayoff said, but it is one that I think operates more by committee, so to speak, and kind of accentuates each other. Sure, we're not the tightest in certain areas, but there's a lot of teams with lots of weaknesses. So if we find something that we think can upgrade us, we'll take a look at it. But at the end of the day, you can't plan on injuries. You just don't know. We like our group. It's gotten us to this point. We'll see where this goes as we head into the trade deadline. So again, very Chevy speak for nothing. A lot of words that doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot. But let me ask you guys this. Sorry, Ezzy. With Nathan Beaulieu now out for the year, and we know he's not coming back. He had surgery for his torn labrum. He's out for the playoffs. He's out for the regular season.
Andrew, you're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
Well, I mean, I'm going to believe what Paul Maurice said in that front. You know, doesn't that almost make it incumbent that the Jets go out, and even if it's just a depth guy, not necessarily a guy who's going to be in your top six, although I think most people would agree that the Jets need to get, they would be better with a different top six defenseman or a top four defenseman specifically. Don't just for the sake of depth and any potential future needs, the Jets need to go out and acquire at least some defenseman right now?
Yes, and before Nathan, before we found out, like, we knew Nathan Beaulieu was obviously injured, but before we found that out, I mean, that we thought that the Jets might acquire defense, but I think this does change things. I don't think it changes things drastically, but yeah, there's a chance that Chevy could acquire a couple of defensemen, right? And you know, we've put lots of names out there, and you know, there's, you know, players like, you know, Jamie Oleksiak, who's a left shot defenseman. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, the Jets are in on Oleksiak right now, but I do think, Drew, that there's a better chance now than there was maybe a week ago that we're going to see multiple defensemen acquired by the Jets. Again, I'm not saying that with certainty, but I'm just saying, like, you know, that would kind of be, you know, logical just based on, you know, Beaulieu being out, because now you've lost your quote unquote seventh defenseman. Like, Logan Stanley has passed Beaulieu. So if Beaulieu was healthy, Logan Stanley would probably remain in the lineup. And sure, you've got Sammy Niku as well, but you can never have enough defensemen, right? Like, we've talked about that, guys, that notion of having, you know, 9 or 10 NHL defensemen, especially when you get into the playoffs, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So yeah, there always is that chance, but Leah, I think, you know, we talked about this in the interview, but Leah mentioned, you know, the cap and how much it's coming into play, and it always comes into play, but especially now, I think that's why you haven't seen any more moves, guys. Like, I'm surprised that we haven't seen more moves. Like, you know, we've seen the Eric Staal to Montreal trade, but, you know, we're only 9 days away, Drew. You just mentioned that. So you're going to start to see trades happen, I think, you know, Monday and Tuesday. Obviously, James Duffy is probably texting the GMs and asking them to hold off till the 12th. I'm joking, obviously, but, you know, I think there are going to be some big moves happening early next week. And I would be pretty surprised at this point if Chevy doesn't bring in at least one defenseman, just because of the way, you know, the defense has played the whole year, and also with Beaulieu out right now.
Just quickly, Dave, before you get in here, some news out of Columbus. Jack Roslovic, a healthy scratch for the Blue Jackets in their game today. So you know, things are going from bad to worse in Columbus. We know that
Torts going to do Torts things, right?
Well, I mean, Torts is getting fired at season, or he's done in Columbus. That seems pretty clear that the time has just run out on him in Columbus. But I just wanted to make note that Jack Roslovic, a healthy scratch for the Blue Jackets. I'm not sure if they're playing this afternoon or tonight, but whenever they're playing, Jack Roslovic won't be in the Blue Jackets lineup.
It's unfortunate, you know. Just going to say, Dave, quickly, and then I'll let you get in here. It's unfortunate because you remember when Roslovic, you know, started with the Blue Jackets, he was already in Columbus, of course, and you know he was a house on fire, you know, picking up multiple point games, and it was looking really good for him. So, you know, unfortunate to see for him that he's now a healthy scratch.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Just to answer Jet's free question in the chat, he asked how much they would have with Beaulieu on LTIR. And it frees up $1.25 million for the Jets.
Plus, they still have money left for Little.
They have about $4.75 million in LTIR space right now. So I think if the Jets needed to make a move, that they could have the space to do it. I mean, look, you're not looking to add guys if you can get an Ekholm. But, I mean, look, guys, I don't think any of us think Nashville's making a trade unless you're going to sell the farm. And I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to sell the farm. So I think I would really remove Nashville as a trading partner. And, again, do you have guys that could be your backup? I mean, Ezzie's 100% right. You need at least 10 defensemen. Right now, the Jets have been lucky. They haven't had to go to the depth, really. But, I mean, if you look at it, right now you've got your six plus Nikku, Heinola and Noje on your taxi squad. And then, you know, again, I'd be loath to pull up a Dylan Samberg at this point. I think he's where he needs to be. I think he's doing what he needs to do. So I don't know that you've got, you know, Chisholm's too young. Kovacevic is young. Gavanke is too young. So you really don't have someone on the moose in terms of pulling them up to be that kind of. So you've got, like I said, you've got the six that they've got in the lineup plus a three on the taxi squad. To me, a guy, if you can get a David Savard, like, how much sense does that make? Columbus seems to be falling back out of it. We thought maybe they're going to be in it. They're in sixth place right now, I believe, in their division. Not that far back of fourth. They're only 3 points back of Nashville. But I don't know that things – I wouldn't go that far because, again, there's a lot of four-point games, right? So it always can be turned around. But I think if you can buy a guy like David Savard, who, again, we've talked about him, would be very good in that shutdown, big, tough, you know, rugged defenseman, kind of a – perfect prototypical guy you'd love to have in the playoffs, who can handle the net front presence for the Winnipeg Jets. Really good friends with Pierre-Luc Dubois. I believe I've read this, that he's one of Dubois' best friends. Probably really goes well in terms of, you know, integration. I think Matthew Perreault would like it because he'd have another Frenchman on the team, and you know, the Français would be flowing. But I mean, I just think there is that element that's important, that comfort, right? Not having to get into a whole new system and be completely foreign, you'd at least have some comfort there. So David Savard, again, is a guy who seems to make sense from the perspective. And that's the reason why I think he's leaped up to the number one spot in the TSN trade board.
Well, then that's what I was going to say, Dave. I think there's going to be, you know, quite a few teams after him. Like, we know that, you know, it's no secret how good he was in not just, you know, last year against Toronto in that first round, but you know, Savard isn't a rookie. What is he, 26 years old, I believe? Like, he's not. This is a guy who's a veteran.
He's got at least 8 years, yeah. At least.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's going to be some other teams after, but there are the connections with Dubois and, you know, Columbus and Winnipeg have made some trades, obviously. So, you know, we'll wait and see what happens. But, yeah, even with that little extra, you know, cap space for Nate Beaulieu, I don't think anybody is expecting the Jets to go after anybody that has a lot of cap space, term on their contracts.
Mm-hmm. Right, which makes, you know, Savard, obviously, he's been at the front of the line. Alex Goligoski, you're hearing a lot about lately, out of Arizona, is a guy who's a potential. Again, he's a UFA at season's end, and he's got a big cap hit. But at this stage of the season, there's basically nobody on a one-year deal that the Jets can't afford,
right,
you know, to bring into there, even two guys, if that's how it worked out. I mean,
I think it comes down to guys, you know, do you want a left shot defenseman or do you want a right shot defenseman? Like,
well, let me ask you that.
That's the big question. And you know, you mentioned Nate Beaulieu, who's obviously a left shot defenseman, but he's more of a third pairing guy. But if you're going to bring David Savard in, I mean, that's probably pushing Tucker Pullman out of the lineup, right? Like, that would be that's your third best defenseman on the right side, right? Obviously, Neil Pionk's number one. You got Dylan DeMello there. So that kind of, to me, is, you know, the big question. And I'm not sure, because Matthias Ekholm, you know, we've talked about that. He has played a little bit on the right side, but he's a left shot defenseman. So again, who does that move down? Like, is Josh Morrissey going to become a third pairing defenseman?
Well, based on his play, a lot of people would say that might be where he needs to be.
Well, I don't think that's fair at all.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, if you look at, you know, Morrissey certainly has been the target for a lot of, I'm going to say, use the word vitriol, but for lack of better word right now, that his performance has not been commensurate with his salary this season. And I think that's probably, you know, that's a reasonable comment, that his struggles have continued this year. And when he looked the best is when he was with Dylan DeMello. And of course, DeMello is now with Logan Stanley. But Morrissey did have a good game Corsi-wise last night against the Leafs. You know, I think Morrissey's struggles come when he has to face those sort of those neck front physical battles. And a guy like David Savard, you know, really helps in that area, because Savard is known for keeping the chances away from the high danger area. He's good at clearing out that high danger zone, you know, and he's a bigger guy. He's a more physical guy, similar, probably an upgrade on Tucker Poolman, but similar in their physicality in front of the net. And that's why I think Savard, for so many people, makes so much sense for the Jets, but it's probably going to be a bit of a bidding war, because he's, you know, the apple of the eye for a lot of different general managers as we sit here 9 days away from the trade deadline, Dave.
Yeah, and think about what you just said. High danger chances. What do the Jets give up a lot of? High danger chances. So, I mean, doesn't it make a lot of sense to have a guy who would fit within that system and is kind of exactly what they need? And again, you kind of have to reward this group for what they've been able to do and who they have on the team. And if you can get a guy like Savard, and again, I couldn't tell you what the cost is. We don't know. We aren't hearing exactly what folks are looking for David Savard, or what folks, what Jarmo Kekalainen, I should say, is looking for, or what he's being offered, or what the scuttlebutt is in that regard in terms of what he might be asking. But again, if it's not a high ask, if it's, you know, again, whatever your draft picks are, you don't even know what the draft pick is worth this year, right? And again, don't get me wrong. The Jets scouts are still doing their work. You know, we've heard from them. They're still working and prepared and ready for the draft as it goes forward. But I'm just saying, this will be a draft unlike any other. And I think the value of those picks isn't necessarily, especially with the Jets team that's going to finish, you know, probably in the upper echelon of the league anyways. So it's not going to be like a super high pick, regardless of what round it's in. I'm just saying, if you can get a Savard type, he just makes sense for this Jets team. And again, you're right, Drew. Jarmo Kekalainen is not a dummy. He's a smart GM. And especially if the pool now has narrowed or dried up because Nashville is no longer offering Ellis and Ekholm. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a second. Now Savard has become a much more premium, even though he was a UFA, he's become much more premium because...
Was Nashville ever offering Ellis? I don't think that...
No, they weren't, but there was some talk out there that maybe Ellis would be... I think Friedman had said something like maybe Ellis is available instead of...
It was in 31 Thoughts a couple weeks ago, just sort of as a passing mention more than... I
was going to say, Ellis, I really like Ellis. I don't think he's going anywhere, but...
No, I don't think...
Point is well taken.
Yeah, and I just think it was just kind of like if Ekholm's not available now, maybe Ellis and that sort of thing. But again, like I said, I just think what does it do is it makes Savard more valuable to Kekalainen, because now there's more teams that have now circled away from Nashville and now they're going back to Columbus and they're saying, okay, well, Savard wasn't necessarily our first choice, but we're definitely interested and we think could be the guy we need to get into the playoffs.
And it might cost you a first round pick, guys. But again, like I appreciate what Dave is saying in terms of like, this isn't considered as strong as draft as previous years. And it has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of players in the draft haven't played as many games, right?
Right.
That's first and foremost. But I think, you know, it doesn't change much in terms of, are you willing to trade that first round pick to make your team better for a playoff push? And we've talked about that. Yes, this is the year that you trade one of those first round picks. Like, we've seen it in the Paul Stastny trade back in 2018. We saw it the next year with Kevin Hayes, right? So, you know, it might be a first round pick. Originally, I was thinking because Savard is in the last year of his contract, it might only cost you a second round pick. But regardless, Dave, it's not going to cost you as much as it would to acquire Matthias Ekholm. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Take a break. Take a pause for a second. When we come back after this, after these commercials, I want you guys to tell me what you would be willing to give up for David Savard from Columbus. Take a breath. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all our social media platforms.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.